So how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Pretty fine. What have you been working on? I mean, of the things that you can talk about.
So this week I've been working on, and actually last week, we've redesigned thoughtbot.com. And this week specifically, I'm working on a services page. So the offering that Thoughtbot does. So
you know what? Like, this is a great thing to talk about this episode. I do have a lot of questions since I was not super involved in the I mean, I was kind of, but not really. So I have questions.
Have many questions?
I have a lot of questions.
About the redesign or the services page?
No, about the redesign. People don't know how the services page look like, but they can actually see the new design.
Time this is released, the services page will be out.
Yes, and also, I don't think we announced it yet, right? So we're it's a scoop.
We'll have announced it.
It's a scoop in this episode. You heard it here first, hopefully.
Maybe.
Well, it's live, so
it is live. There's still a bunch of bugs though. Like there's one missing translation. So I know there's a bunch of other bugs.
Well, let's talk about this. Why did we need to redesign instead of taking what we had before and just improving on it?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. And normally I would lean to evolving and iterating a design. The last thoughtbot.com design had gone through multiple iterations of I don't want to call it redesign. It went through multiple iterations. It had seen multiple designers touch it and also developers go over it. And frankly, it was from the first vision of what it was supposed to be, at least the homepage and several of the other pages, it was a far cry from what it was first supposed to be. So the design didn't really evolve well, and the iterations took away from what the design should have been instead of adding to it. The other reason was that I had done a bunch of interviews with clients or potential clients that ended up hiring another company for whatever reason. And one of the things that was mostly evident was that we're all expert designers and developers at Thoughtbot. We're like, I would say senior level if we went anywhere else. And most of those senior level people aren't the friendliest of people. And I guess we have a reputation for being very friendly. And I would hope that like everyone at Thoughtbot is nice to talk to and fun to work with. And we wanted that to come through as well. So balancing the, you know, expert designers and developers with the friendliness and playfulness of the, you know, personalities at Thoughtbot.
Yeah.
So it was that combination, and we thought that the previous design didn't do that very well. It was more leaning towards expert, and it was, you know,
not friendly enough.
Not friendly, and that was specifically like, I wasn't, when I was doing these interviews, I wasn't talking about thoughtbot.com. I was talking more about their overall like sales experience from start to finish and what their, you know, user journey was about all of that. And, you know, one of the things that they kept on saying was, oh, like, yeah, on the phone calls, you guys were really friendly. And like, it was very evident that like our attitude and our personalities were coming through in the sales calls and every interaction they had with us, but it wasn't coming through in the design from the start.
I see.
And so like those were the two big reasons. The design, kind of the iterations that the design took were making the design worse. And the overall feeling that we wanted for thoughtbot.com wasn't going in the right direction.
Okay. So it was mostly like an effort to make the brand of the website match the sort of like
the personality of the
personality
people that
and image. Yeah. Okay, but I thought there was also like changes in the information architecture of the website.
Yep, there were.
How does that
came out of the interviews too, and just somewhat common sense. So the majority of the way that Thoughtbot makes its money, like I would say, like 80 to 90% is through our consulting services. And the old site had, In the main navigation, there were something like 6 or 7 links, and 2 of them were for the consulting. So one of them was linking to case studies, and the other was linking to a way to contact us, right? To hopefully get more consulting work. Other than that, there were books, and I'm trying to remember some of the we had podcasts as one of the main. So it was taking away from why we wanted people to be viewing the Thoughtbot site. And it was also not oriented towards why people might be hiring Thoughtbot for jobs to be done. So the way that I looked at it is we get hired for multiple reasons. And a lot of those are because of the work outside of the consulting work. So the podcasts that we have, our playbook, our blog posts, the open source work, and the products that we build. But for all of that, the company doesn't make, especially like open source and these podcasts, like we did in the blog, we don't make any money off of most of those, right?
Yeah.
And the money that we do make off of them, it's because they were just marketing for our consulting work.
Yeah.
So one of the goals was to consolidate those down. So we have now a tools page where our products are and our open source work is. And there the idea is, you know, if you're looking for Thoughtbot's open source or product, like they're doing the same job. It just happens that, you know, one of them you're paying for and one of them you're not. The same thing with all of the Learn stuff. So we combined Upcase on our site with the books, with the podcasts, and we don't have the blog there, but it should be there. And all of that is, you know, us trying to teach or provide, you know, learning to our community. You know, it just so happens that Upcase costs probably the most, and it's a monthly, you know, monthly cost as opposed to books, which are a one-off cost and a little less expensive. And then there's the podcasts and the blog, which are both free. So like it's, you know, as you go down the page, you should be like, hopefully there's like a price range that matches, you know, or a solution for what that user is looking for. And so combining all of those and then looking to see what the holes were in the website as well. So right now we have case studies up there, and we've had case studies for a little while now, but we never talked about what we actually do. I don't know if it's because sometimes it's hard for us to talk about what we do, but we don't have any kinds of services or like, hey, we do X, Y, and Z. And that was one of the things that we wanted to make sure came clear. So that's what I'm working on now. So the primary navigation is going to go from a bunch of links that go to the Learn and the tools to mostly our case studies, eventually our services, our team pages. So who's at Thoughtbot and who you'll be working with, and hopefully friendly faces, and then, you know, link to contact us. So we're narrowing down to what I envision the funnel to be, to be somewhere along the lines of, hey, what does Thoughtbot do? Oh, they do this thing. Great. How do I know they do it really well? They're going to the case study and seeing how we work. And then from there, they're being like, oh, I live in Stockholm and I want to see what the Stockholm team looks like. And so they can go to the Stockholm team, and then from there they can contact us. So that's what I envision as the funnel. I don't, we're putting in some analytics to test that, assumption, so that we can see how people go through the site and if that assumption is correct.
Yeah, that's that answers my question. I actually like the foundation of this new design. I find that there are a lot of small things that kind of irk me, but I think there's already too many people working on it right now that I feel like I'm not ready to jump in yet. I want it to cool down or cool off a little bit, and then I can actually, if those things are not picked up, then I would pick them up, you know, just like alignment things or like some line heights in some areas, like, you know, small things that I think, I'm not sure if everyone would agree, but I would still open the PR and see if
I don't see why there's like, I would say either like create a card in Trello and start doing work on it, and there's no reason why you can't start. I've been very active in making sure that everything in Trello is, so I think we've talked about Trello in previous podcasts. We're using Trello to kind of coordinate between there are multiple designers and a couple developers working on the site right now. And I've been fairly cognizant of who's working on it and what they're working on and making sure that they're putting it in Trello and making sure that everyone who is working on it is working on different things.
Yeah. How have we managed like having multiple designers working on it? Is there like some sort of agreed on like style guide, or because I see that some pages are done entirely like by one person. So it would be like this page is done by this person and this page is done by this person. And so are we aiming like to make these pages look as if they were done by the same person, or are we okay having some sort of like a little bit of personality into these pages so that when you look at this page, it kind of feels like something that Kyle would do or something that Reda would do? Or like has this been a thing that has been discussed? Or
it's not something that's been discussed. I think it's been something that's come naturally that, you know, one of our designers in Boston, Cole, started, actually, even before that, another one of our designers, Connie, started redesigning it. Cole took it from her, and because she got booked, and he was an apprentice at the time, and he took the primary lead on doing a lot of the initial design work on some of the pages that we just talked about. And from there, it's been, people have taken on the pages that either they think need to be done, or Connie has come back and she's been doing a lot of work on the hero section of both our homepage and our case study page, just because she thought that they could be better. Yeah. And so she's been working a lot on that. I've taken the services page where I haven't really done any actual visual design on the project yet. I've been mostly doing implementation and overseeing everything and making sure that, like, you know, the concerns that you had were like there are too many designers, that, you know, everyone's working really well together and, you know, we're not stepping on each other's toes. As far as the style, I think, you know, the style that Cole started with has been adopted really well by Connie and myself and Mike, another designer in Boston. And we're starting to create, you know, our own flavor in that style, and it still works. So my thought there is, like, as long as it works within the brand that he has set up, that we should be able to have variation within that. And actually, one of the designers in Denver, Rachel, has started working on a guide for running design sprints. So taking the work that I did in the design sprint repo and putting it in a nicer frame. And she took the style that Cole was using and ran with it and kind of made it her own too. So other than that, it's all of us are putting our designs into a red pen and throwing them up, and whoever is available to comment on the design work, you know, is doing so. And so, you know, it's not, we're not doing design in the dark and everyone's seeing everyone else's work. So I'm sure there's like a huge cross-pollination of ideas and what's going on. And hopefully, you know, there's a balance between people having their own spin on things and then people, you know, staying within the same brand, same site.
So this underlying style, like, how is it defined? Is it a set of fonts and font sizes and colors and components, or is it like more granular than that? So like you have to, so if you're using a list, this is the type of list that it should be. Or if you're using a section with multiple photos, this is the kind of, so like what kind of level of granularity we're talking about here?
So yeah, I would say that there's a couple, you know, rules that Cole set up. He set up, you know, a layout style with a left photo and a right content. He set up some styles for type. My gut there is like, follow some of them and you don't need to follow all of them. And there's ways to break those and still stay within the brand. We don't have necessarily like a brand guide right now, and I don't necessarily know if we need one, as long as, you know, the people involved are staying involved. That might change, and we might get to a point where we need a brand guideline for someone to jump into the project and feel confident about making changes. But right now, it's using the same typeface, same type style, same layout, and breaking potentially one or multiple of those to, you know, create your own kind of design.
Yeah, that answers my question. Because like one thing I noticed is that I can't help but notice some small differences in how people treat some things. Maybe because I am not too involved, so I can look at things with a little bit of distance.
Yeah.
Like bullet points, for instance, alignment. People align them differently. I know you don't indent them, and most of the other places they're indented. Do you think this is something that down the road it's going to be like corrected so that like we use the same, for instance, indentation style for all bullet points? Or is that something like that's in the area of like that's up to the designer if that fits their layout or not?
So I'm guessing that once I put this, so the design I'm doing right now is in Sketch. It's not in code. And I imagine once I put it in code, those small differences won't be, you know, as evident. Because I'll just use the regular bullet styles for the site that we already have set up, and I'll be using, you know, the same line height. I'm sure there's probably a little bit of a difference between what I have in Sketch and what's on the site right now.
Yeah,
I think, you know, the way that we built the site is important. So we used a lot of components for CSS, and so making sure that, you know, when each one of these is built, that the customization of each one of those components isn't crazy. Like, you know, changing the standard bullet list that we have everywhere else on the site doesn't make sense to go hanging when everywhere else on the site they're indented. Yeah.
Yep. That's fair enough, I guess. Do you still use Sketch to sort of like work on like visual design, as opposed to just throw the stuff together and see how like you want to make it work on the page?
It certainly depends on the type of design I'm tackling. Since the design for this page and a lot of the site is like marketing and highly visual, I'm jumping in Sketch first. Usually when I'm tackling an app, I start with HTML, and there'll be times where I'll jump between Sketch and Photoshop, depending on which tool I think will help me design the best. Because I do think best visually with design, but like there I'm laying a foundation with HTML and CSS, and here I'm purely designing in Sketch because of how visual it is. And
yeah, no, I still do that actually. I get the benefit of actually start like working on a graphic editor first before committing to writing code, because like I realized that at some point, like I think 2 years ago, I used to be like, you know what, I don't need Sketch, I will just go in and do it. But over time I realized that I get too stuck on some things that are technical, and that slows me down, and I end up not like being totally focused on the visual part of things. So I think it's good to start in Sketch, do things quickly, see like what works and what doesn't. And then it doesn't have to be pixel perfect, as you said, like it's fine if some things are off or whatever. But once you get that, I feel good about this, then you implement it. And then once you implement it, you will start noticing that some decisions you made do not look as good in the final result. So you have to make some some tweaks basically. And you do those right in code. I mean, some people might prefer to go back to the graphic editor and do it there, but I feel like that's a, kind of like a waste of time. Like the entire point of implementing your own design is that you can do these small tweaks directly in code without going back and forth.
Yeah, I enjoy going back and forth just because I have it ingrained in me that like I'll know when I can solve the problem easily in the browser or when I can solve the problem easiest in a graphic editor. And so like if it's a small issue like line height or the way the type's rendering and I need to change that in the web, I'm doing that in the web because I won't have the same clarity, I guess. I won't see the actual rendering in either Sketch or Photoshop. But like if it's a big layout issue, I need, a lot of the times I'll need to think about that outside of the browser and in a graphical editor, because it's easier for me to push things around there.
Yeah, but tricks I'm talking about is mostly like decimal point like things.
Yeah, those are easier to do in the browser. Yeah.
I'm not talking like big changes. It's more like this font could be a little bit. It's crazy the amount of time I spend doing that. A lot of like, especially on like side projects where like time is not, it's not as precious. Like when we're doing client work, sometimes we try to focus more on having a minute an MVP, and we typically leave the polish to the end of the project. But like on side projects, like I have no timeline. I might finish like a feature like one weekend and spend like 3 months just like nudging pixels here and there. And yeah, it happened. I did a side project where I make a Mac app for testing internet speed, and I added like a graph view, and I think the implementing it wasn't really the hard part, but getting all the contrast and colors and animations right, that took me I don't know, like 3 months of I didn't work on it every evening, but I did work on it a decent amount of time. And it's insane like the length that a lot of designers are ready to go in order to make their design's perfect. I'm not saying that's healthy. It's not, because you ship a lot less. And
there's always a balance between that's what we're dealing with now with the website, right? Like it's live, but we haven't announced it to anyone yet. There's always a balance between shipping and, you know, making sure that you have everything perfect the way that you want it, especially with designers. And striking the right chord on that balance is super important, I think.
Right, right.
And it totally depends on what you're designing, right? Like shipping early for an app is a lot easier because you want to get that feedback. Whereas shipping something that's like highly polished and visual is like, you want to make sure that everything's in the right place.
Right. And I think the thing I keep having always some sort of side project is basically to do this stuff. Like, that's the entire point. Like, my goal is not to make money, or in fact, I am spending more money on this stuff, on the side stuff, because like paying for APIs and stuff, and I don't make as much. But it's like just having that thing where like you're just like, you don't want to do something that's too like ambitious. You just want to like, you know, tweak these pixels here, or this color is like slightly off, and just do that for like hours on end. I think that has a relaxing effect on me recently. It's more like designing as a hobby.
Right.
Good. So
I was going to change the topic, but if you have another question. Like what you were working on and what you've been interested in.
Oh, I've been doing a lot of small things, and I think I developed this ability to multitask, not doing the same thing at the same time, but I guess with having a lot of side projects and also using my in-book time on multiple things, I kind of got used to having different things and still keeping all of them moving forward. I think I'm pretty happy with that. At some point I was like, I shouldn't probably have more than one project going on, because I might not be able to. And I think the key to doing this is to keep things small and not super ambitious. I think the moment you start adding complicated features or trying to do more than like, or trying to bite more than you can chew, then you typically end up in this cycle of like, you get discouraged, like you get blocked by something, you get discouraged, you abandon that project, and it just keeps going that way. So I think so far, like, there are very few projects that I abandoned, and I think I'm happy about that. Like, even the projects that I started a long time ago and I haven't been able to ship, I still have them somewhere, and sometimes I open them, I update them, so that one day if I decide to go back and resume working on them, it would be a lot easier. Yeah, recently I've been doing a lot of things. One of the things I can talk about is I've added like more features to Chromatic, which is the color picker that that Thoughtbot released, I don't know, like a few months ago. That was mostly, in the beginning, it was just like to find color names because we typically need to name our colors in SAS or iOS so that we can reuse them later. And I wrote an article about it, which we will link to in the show notes. And yeah, I added a very frequently requested feature, which is ability to copy the color value. So hex or RGB or, you know, like the color value, not just the color name. So now I can do both, like copy the color name and the value. Yeah, so that's been fun. A lot of the things I've been doing involve a lot of development as well, which is quite different from what I guess you've been doing, working at a bigger team together on something. I mean, it's like quite the opposite of that, is doing these solo projects. And it has its own charm, I guess, especially if you do them in a Thoughtbot, you get still like the help of other developers and designers. So you're not really working alone on it. But at the same time, like, You have that sort of like freedom to do things at your own pace and to define your own goals, and I think that's not bad. That's not a bad thing.
Well, so I'm really interested in to hear more about how you context switch, because before we jumped on the call, you were saying you're in a really good groove with writing, and I know you've been doing some sales, which is something else that we could talk about. But like, how do you context switch from going from working on Chromatic to working on a blog post to jumping on a sales call to jumping on a call with me to record Tentative? Like, do you have like any tricks there? Like,
yes.
How do you context switch from one thing to the next?
I have a very easy trick, which actually is the key to making this work. When I'm commuting to work in the morning, I don't have a clear idea of what I will be doing that day, especially if I don't have client work. If I have client work, you know that you will be working about like on these stories or a number of stories. So that kind of like removes this from the equation. But when you're not on client work, I basically come to the office and I organize things in the order of which one of these things I would be able to make the most progress on today and maybe ship something in that specific thing. And if, for instance, like if a sales is about to close, or I feel like if I take an action now that would have bigger impact on the sales card, then I just go and do it immediately. If I feel like this is gonna be slow, and even if I send this now, it's probably not gonna be read until later due to time zones or whatever. So I go to the next thing. So I bump that down in the list of things. And basically what I'm trying to say is that if I know that something is gonna take me a lot of time without being able to make something significant on that thing, then I just bump it down in the list. And by having like these multiple things that you can work on, you always end up with one that and like a number of hours spent on this will maximize the productivity you will have. So like for today, I was not planning to write the blog post, but of all the things I have going on, this is the closest to being shipped. So if I focus on it one afternoon, I'll be able to finish it, and I'll put it on a PR for so that people can review it tomorrow. And that would also free me tomorrow to do something else that's probably would have more impact during that day. So yeah, this is typically how, and I do that also like for my side projects. Like if I have a few of them, and sometimes like I would think I have an hour or two this evening. What is the thing that would benefit most from this 1 hour? I guess this is the only trick.
How do you keep track of the projects you're running? Is it all in your head, or do you like write it down, or is there Trello. An app? Trello?
I use Trello, and yeah, I have some personal Trello boards that I organize some of this. And I also use just to-do lists that I discard by the end of the day. I typically don't keep a to-do list for more than a day. So when I come in the morning, like here's the list of things I can work on. I look at them. I pick what I need to work on, and by the end of the day, I just delete it. I use Apple Notes, which they added the to-do list thing recently. Before, I just used to use Trello lists, because you can also create to-do lists in any card on Trello. But I just pick what, like, the lowest friction thing. I don't want to spend a lot of time organizing this, because at the end you end up spending more time organizing stuff than actually working on it.
Right.
So yeah, that's typically how I do it. And sometimes, like, I would break this rule because of urgency, especially when it comes to sales or hiring, or sometimes, like, you're not the only person who is involved, so you have to adapt. But most of the time I still follow this rule, and it works pretty well for me, because I always feel like I'm doing something useful.
Awesome. That, I like all of that. It's interesting to see, like, all of the ways that we use Trello, and to hear about the ways that Trello is being used. We should get them to sponsor the podcast.
We've talked a lot about Trello and Apple Notes. Yeah. They should both sponsor this show. Yeah, I use Trello just because it's... I think I like the Kanban board approach, and I guess this, like, I like the, you know, like, having those things visually in columns. I'm pretty sure there are other services that do that, but Trello is the go-to service, I guess.
Yeah, I think the value in Trello is just from the amount of flexibility it gives you, just by having the lists of things, and you can create as many lists and put as many cards inside of those lists as possible. And
yeah,
you're in charge of what those lists mean, right?
Yeah. And the only thing that I typically do in Trello that a lot of people might not do is that I don't use Trello as a starting point. It's like, I do use it for, like, client projects or projects involving a team, but for my personal Trello boards, I use them as a place to check in once I am done with work, not the other way around. Because the thing is, like, sometimes I do look at them and see, like, all right, so what can I work on? But that's usually a bad sign if I have to go at a Trello board to know what I need to work on. It feels more like, in that case, it feels like I'm not entirely sure how best I can use my time, whether company time or you know, personal time. But I use it more like, I did this, so let's go to Trello, move this card, and organize a little bit what's coming up next based on my feelings about what I've done today. And then I'll probably not even need to look at it because I know what I put in there. So yeah, I don't use it to guide my work. I use it to track my work, if that makes any sense, which is a kind of a little bit of both when we work as a team. Like, it's both to guide us and also to track what we've been doing.
Right. I agree with looking at, you know, what you've done at the end of the day. Like, one of the things that I continuously do is I've been using OmniFocus for the things that I need to get done, and making sure that I use flags to figure out what I need to do when, making sure that whatever's flagged is either deferred till tomorrow or deferred till another day when I do think I'll be able to get it done at the end of the day. And it's like clearing my head before I go to sleep kind of thing. It also, like, I'll check to see what's coming up for the next day and do the same thing there. Like, if I do want to work on that thing the next day, then I'll, you know, keep it there. Or if I don't, I'll move it to another day. Sounds like basically the same thing that you're doing.
Yeah, I always found OmniFocus's UI a bit too overwhelming. Like, I don't know.
I've been using it for a few months now. Since we had that tools conversation, I, like, switched, like, a month after that. I have, like, this ADD with getting things done tools, but I've been using OmniFocus for a while now. I have it set up so that it works really well for me. And I wouldn't suggest OmniFocus to anyone unless they already know how they want to work. Because it's like, I compare it to Vim, where unless you know how you want to work in Vim, you're just going to be lost, right? And yeah, the same thing with OmniFocus. Like, you could just spend so much time fiddling around with the controls in OmniFocus where it doesn't make sense for you to use OmniFocus.
Yep.
So that, like, there are better to-do lists if you don't have a concrete way of doing things, or you don't have a specific, you know, way you want to do things. So I think after using all of the other tools, I finally come to a conclusion of like, this is how I want to get things done. This is how I want to keep track of my lists. And OmniFocus is the one tool that like has all of the features to do that. It also has a ton of features that I don't use. And just like Vim, like there are things in Vim, there are lots of things. I probably know like 20% of Vim, of what I can do in Vim. But that's all I really need to know, right?
I think like, if you know that, I don't think you can say I know 20%.
Okay, I know 5%.
Because like there's the unknown unknowns, and you can't, basically you can't give a number. I can say I know more than 0% of Vim. I can totally be sure that that's correct. But there's so much stuff that you wouldn't even know that you didn't know.
Right.
I saw someone tweeting about a Twitter client in Vim, or so that you can see your tweets in Vim and write tweets in Vim. It's a plugin, I think. I don't know. I just had to say this because I found it a little bit over the top.
You should never have to leave Vim. Soon there's going to be a browser built into Vim.
Yep. Emacs have been there already, but this is another discussion, I guess.
A bad idea.
I guess people like to... Like, whenever they like some environment, they want to use that for everything. Or whenever they like a tool, they want to use it for everything. And it's a common thing. Like, people who would know, for instance, Photoshop, they would like to use Photoshop for everything, including web design and all of that. Or, like, yeah, it's just a nature of, the proverbial hammer, a nail.
When you know how to use a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of thing. Cool. I think it was a good discussion. I learned a lot of things about our own site, which is great.
Hopefully that's useful for everyone else.
Yeah, of course. Cool. I hope. I mean,
it was nice talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Likewise.
This is episode 25. You can see our show notes at tentative.fm/25. You can tweet at us. Send us all of your tweets. Tentative.fm. At Tentative FM.
Yeah, one word.
Email us at hosts@tentative.fm. And if you like the show, you know, please rate us on iTunes.
If you don't like something like the way we sound or the sort of topics we talk about, please let us know. I think we need that sort of feedback. And if you do like them, please let your friends know so that they listen to the show. And if you don't like both of us, then sorry, we can't do much about it. Like, we are who we are. And you are who you are.
Okay. See you later.
See ya.
Bye.